Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Just some news to bring you before we move on. An 18-year-old boy has pleaded guilty on the first day of his trial at Liverpool Crown Court to murdering three young girls in a knife attack at a Taylor Swift-themed dance class in Southport last July. I'm sure you'll remember that awful incident. Axel Ruda Cubana was charged with the murders of a 9-year-old, 6-year-old and a 7-year-old who died following the attack at the Heart Space dance facility on the 29th of July. He also pleaded guilty to the attempted murder of 10 other people. Now we move on though, and I'm joined in the studio by clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman to answer your parenting questions, and you can keep those questions coming in for David. The WhatsApp number is 0870 32 32 32. Text us on 51551 or email todaycb at rte.ie. Hello David.
Good morning.
Lovely to have you with you. Thank with you. Us and in person too. Let's go to this one. This is about a child who won't speak in school. So he has ASD and childhood apraxia of speech. His speech has improved tremendously over the past year. He's full of energy at home, but he's been experiencing severe anxiety about going to school. He often cries and says he feels sick in the mornings. And his speech and language therapist noted that he seems like a completely different child in the school environment, frozen and rigid. It wasn't until May last year that they heard him say anything during junior infants. So we can assume he's in senior infants now. Mm-hmm. My heart is breaking, says this parent. I think his deep fear of speaking at school is because he's afraid of making mistakes or not being understood. And they want to know if you've any advice. It's not just the speaking, though, is it? It's about being frozen and rigid and being upset and saying he's feeling sick in the mornings before he goes in.
Yes, all of which would suggest that he is in fact highly anxious going into school. But I think the mam is probably correct that it is to do with the apraxia. So that's like a developmental disorder for the child. So there's an actual kind of, kind of brain miscommunication that his speech isn't coming out fluently. He's not able to say what it is that he wants to say. And so I could imagine that is really distressing for him. And it would suggest that, yes, he was very quiet then all the way through junior infants. Mm-hmm. And now that he's in senior infants, I guess it's about trying to liaise with the school to see what kind of additional support can they give him. Is there any opportunity for him where he can be in like either one-to-one settings or with just maybe one or two children that he could be encouraged to be doing some activity where he might, chance speaking? And it's about kind of building up those small opportunities for him to feel like he's able to speak, he's understood, he's not mistreated by other kids because of his speech and any disfluency that he has. And so that he just begins to feel a bit more confident about actually being in school and that it's okay and that other children and the teachers are all very understanding and warm and receptive to him, even if he struggles at times with his speech. Because I guess, you know, they're working hard with the speech and language therapist, and that's obviously had a lot of, that's worked very well because it sounds like his speech has come on quite a lot. And so alongside that continued work, it's just about giving him the confidence that other kids will, they'll be able to understand him, they're going to like him, you know, and that he's going to be okay. And once he begins to speak a little bit and then speaks more and more, and gradually his confidence will grow.
So hopefully they've got a really supportive school that they can.
So it's about going in, chatting with them, seeing maybe even the speech and language therapist might be able to just link in with the teacher as well, just to give a little bit of advice about what might help in terms of helping him to just have these kind of safe opportunities to speak in the school.
I have a lot of questions coming in about anxiety in primary school children. Now, I know that you did a round the country tour and
yes.
A lot of questions.
I'm writing
came
a book
up.
Now, Claire, about it.
Is this because there's a lot of it around or people are noticing it more? What's going
well,
on?
Well, it's a number of different things. I mean, definitely there are more children who will report, you know, anxiety. And I guess, you know, we talked about this before and, you know, I'm a big believer that we need to think about children feeling anxious as opposed to believing that they've got some kind of anxiety disorder. I mean, anxiety disorders are there, but it's about 1 in 12 children suffer from an anxiety disorder. So that's whatever that is that about 8% of children will have, you know, actual generalized anxiety disorder and so on. There are a lot more children, though, who feel anxious. And I think what's happening now for a lot of parents is parents are probably tuned in a little bit more to it, but are beginning to pathologize it way too soon. They're beginning to see it as a problem when in fact it's just typically normal reasons for children to be anxious, and they need support for sure to help get past their anxiousness, to be able to feel like they can function and that they can get through it, and that they can then build up the resilience and the confidence of knowing, oh, I felt anxious before this, I still went and did it even though I was feeling anxious, and I'm now okay, and so that gives me the confidence to go and try and approach it again. So I think there's definitely, I think parents need to feel more confident themselves that actually, even if their child is anxious, it's not the the impending sign of some, you know, lifelong problem. It's just one of the typical things that, I mean, children get anxious about so many different things. And primary
did we
school
always
kids
are, become anxious about things, or is
always
this new?
No, fears of the dark, fears of monsters.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember as a primary school child, we had a very long corridor in a bungalow, and right at the end of it was the utility room, and it had a glass door, and it was always pitch black, and I could not walk down that corridor near this black door, this glass door, which who knows what was behind it.
So this, you know, is more about how we as adults are dealing with this, is it?
It's as much about it, for sure. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if it's more to do with what we're doing. But yeah, it's definitely that we need to be more confident ourselves that we can help our children cope with it.
Okay, so we have an 8-year-old now who starts to get very clingy at night time and won't let her mother leave her upstairs. She becomes really upset and it takes a long time to settle. Have you any advice? Is that more of this anxiety problem, would you say?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, that could be, or they just got distressed about something. Something might have happened in school. They had just a bit of a wobble. And so, of course, we know when children go to bed, they need, you know, pure comfort, pure security in order to be able to fall asleep. If a child doesn't feel safe or secure for whatever reason, then they are going to want their mum or dad to stay with them. And I'd be interested to know, we don't know much from what you've described there, but I'd be interested to know how the mum and dad are responding to her needing more time and needing more physical presence from the parents. Because if they're kind of trying to tell her that she's okay and they're leaving her, all that's doing is exacerbating her anxiety. So I think they need to lean into it a little bit more, and so accept the fact that just for now she needs more of their time at night time. So they go up and they actually say, look, I'm committing now, I'm going to just sit here with you while you fall asleep, all right? So you can just relax now, I'll be here, I'll be in the room, I'll be sitting here beside the door, you know, I've got me knitting or I've got whatever, and but I'll be here and you can just relax now and let yourself fall asleep, because it sounds like she was in the habit of falling asleep herself. And so they do that until she goes back to falling asleep within 10 or 15 minutes or whatever used to be her habit. Then they can say to her, look, I'm just going to be sitting outside the door now, I'll be right beside, you know, and if you want to call to me, I'll be here. And then they do that for maybe a week or so until the daughter can be reassured that their mum or dad is actually outside the door. And then they can say, look, I'm just going to be popping down, but I'll be coming back up every 2 minutes. And so then you start this really regular cycle of checking visits. And again, it's about you building that consistency that your child can rely upon or trust the fact that you will be there to support them. And then over time, you can extend that. And so then you're back to doing a checking visit every 10 minutes and she's probably asleep before you come back.
See, that might feel as though you're regressing a little bit yourself in terms of your parenting. This is what I used to do when my child was 3 or 4.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying now you lean into it, because for whatever reason, she's been thrown off her kilter a little bit. So she used to be very settled, very easy. Now something has happened. She's you know, she's not that easy. And so you just lean into it. You just give her the support when she needs it, knowing that you can wean her off that support over time. And that's the bit, again, for a parent that you have to think, okay, this is not me now stuck in my daughter's bedroom for the next 20 years while she's trying to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Assuming that she's living in Dublin and won't be able to leave the house before she's 28.
Well, and you haven't failed and it hasn't gone all wrong. It's just one of those things you have to deal with.
You know, I mean, we always have to think of children as being, you know, fluid and changing. We can't think of them ever as being fixed. And so, you know, what's working now is not necessarily what's working or going to be working in a year's time. You know, I mean, you have the same issue with children and food. You know, I've people forever telling me, oh, sure, they were a great eater, and then at 3 they just stopped eating. I've never, you know, now they're so fussy and they're whatever, you know, and then they hit 16 and they're back eating, you know, all around them. So yeah, children are, you know, children move through developmental phases. They have new challenges at different stages along the way. Sometimes those challenges are overwhelming for them. They don't cope very well. We need to support them, but then they'll start to settle. And so it's about, yeah, just having a little bit of confidence ourselves that these are just phases typically, you know, that phrase, this too shall pass, I think is really, if we could hold on to that as a parent, we maybe mightn't panic as much, knowing that, yeah, this is just going to be difficult for a while, but it's going to get okay.
It's a really important one to remember, especially when you've people starting out, you know, with the first new baby, you feel like this situation is going to last forever. It changes.
My wife edits all of my Irish Independent articles. She's a psychologist as well. So I get her to read through my Irish Independent articles before I file them. And she goes through, and I would say 8 out of every 10 articles, she adds in the phrase, this too shall pass. I'm thinking, I can't put that in every article that I write, but that's my wife's advice for everything.
Can, well.
I probably
see,
could. Well, it would
right
be accurate anyway. It would be accurate.
Let's move up in the ages now. I'm going to go to this one. My son is 18 and has disclosed to his teacher that he is struggling and having more bad days than good. So the school have contacted me, this is the parent, and we're seeking counselling to support him. But they want to know how they can support him at home in the meantime going forward, what questions are good questions to ask him to offer him a space to open up, and what should I not do?
Don't ask him too many questions, ironically, because sometimes when we ask questions of teenagers particularly, it can feel a little bit like an inquisition. And of course, if they don't want to answer, or they don't feel that they can answer, or they're afraid that the answer that they're going to give is going to upset or distress us, then they're going to end up having to lie, or they're going to end up having to try to block us in some way. So what you can do is make a lot more empathy statements. And so you might, for example, if the school have contacted you and say, look, the school have been in touch, they tell us that you're struggling a lot more than we certainly were aware of, you know, just that you know, we're aware of that now. We really care about the fact that you're struggling, and we're always available to support you. Okay. So if ever you're feeling that, you know, things are not good on a day, please come talk to us. So that's just a statement saying, look, we're attuned to what's going on for you. And then at other times you can say, oh, you seem in pretty good form. I'm guessing you had a good enough day at school. Or he comes in with the face of thunder on him, or he's really upset or looks down on himself, and you say, yeah, you look like you're struggling today. Mm-hmm. And so it's that, just kind of knowing, for him knowing that you have him in mind, that you are attuned to him and aware of how he's feeling, is support enough, I think, in the interim before he gets this counselling. I think the counselling will help him.
You think that's a good idea then, to seek out the counselling?
Yeah, I mean, he's 18, and so whatever's going on for him, you know, is obviously not something that he felt he could come talk to his parents about initially, because he hasn't, and it's the school who've discovered that he's not doing so well. And so, yeah, absolutely, he'll have this confidential space. That might help him process if there's a particular issue that's led to him struggling right now. Might be just the overwhelm, might be approaching leaving cert, you know, who knows? There's a lot going on for 18-year-olds.
I think it's hard to do what you've described, though, because the instinct, I would imagine, well, this would be me anyway, what's wrong? What happened?
I know.
What can we do?
You see, parents are fixers, ultimately.
Yes,
you know,
it's your job.
We perceive problems. In fact, we anticipate problems and we try and fix them before they even become a problem for our kids. And of course, you know, in some ways that is good and it's nice and it's kind, and so kids benefit from that. But the downside of it is that we then take away some of their own power to fix their own problems. And so, you know, we could actually disempower them a little bit by fixing all the problems all the time. And so sometimes when, particularly, I mean, he's 18 now. So particularly, you know, if you've got older kids and you see that they're having a problem, sometimes it's enough just to acknowledge the problem and to let them know, I see that you've got a problem. I understand the problem that you have. And if you'd like my help, I'm more than willing to help, rather than just suddenly jumping in with all the help and just wait for your child to come ask you. There's another phrase that I'm always struck by, which is that, you know, unasked for advice is almost always unwelcome. And so that means as a parent, then we have to just hold back from just rushing in with the solution, rushing in with the advice, and waiting to see, does our child want it? I mean, they need advice. They need guidance for sure at times. But just see, do they want it before you offer it?
We need to be trained. That's what you're telling me. We need to be whipped into shape back a little bit.
I have a whole career based on the fact that parents need to be trained. And you know, having gone through a lot of it myself, you know, even with all the understanding and all the professions, you still get it wrong at times and you still will make mistakes. So always be reassured, you only ever have to do as well as you can do. There's no perfect in parenting, that's for sure.
David, thank you for that reassurance. David Coleman there. We have to take a quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.